This episode of Risen Motherhood is funded by our generous donors. If you like this podcast, please consider joining them at risenmotherhood.com/give.
Motherhood is hard. One second, we think we're doing a good enough job, and the next, we feel like the worst mom on the planet, which is why we need the refreshing truth of the gospel to be repeated over and over, giving us hope in the everyday moments. So, Mama, whether you're sipping cold coffee or doing a sink full of dishes, we hope you'll find truth, encouragement, and laughter here. This is the Risen Motherhood Podcast. Thanks for joining us.
Today, we're excited to welcome Elise Fitzpatrick to the Risen Motherhood Podcast. Elise's interview is part of our series, Faithful Motherhood, where we're talking with women whose children are grown about how the gospel has impacted their motherhood over the years. These are not meant to be prescriptive interviews for how to do motherhood, but they're just a glimpse at one woman's unique walk and lessons she's learned as she's lived out her calling in the Lord. So today we're talking with Elise about what it was like to be a first-generation Christian, what pressures and fears she faced as a young mom, and she also opens up about what she wishes she would have done differently. Elise holds a certificate in biblical counseling from CCEF San Diego and a master's in biblical counseling from Trinity Theological Seminary. She's authored 23 books on daily living and the Christian life, many of which you can find on our resources page at risenmotherhood.com. Let's get to the show with Elise, Laura, and myself.
Well, hi, Elise. Thanks so much for joining us on Risen Motherhood today.
Thank you. I'm glad to be here.
Yeah, we are super excited. You are someone that we have been, Emily and I have been reading your books since the moment we became mothers, before we became mothers too. Uh-huh. One of your favorites always sticks out to us, Give Them Grace. We love that book. And so it's just a delight to have you on and to get to speak with you, because I know so much of your work has shaped us as mm-hmm. moms and just as women of God as well.
Thank you so much. I'm really glad to hear that.
Okay, so to start us off, can you just give us a little picture into what your life looks like today? How many, children you have? What do your days look like? Just give us a little glimpse into the life of Elise.
Yeah, so I am almost 68. And so what that means is I am an empty nester. And I have three adult kids and six grandkids. All three of my kids live near us in Southern California because, Southern California.
Exactly.
Why would we leave? And so my kids, my grandkids all live within about 20 minutes of us. And so we get to see them a lot. And what I do during the day when I'm not going down to watch one of them play some sort of sport or something like that, the other thing that I do during the day is I write and just generally pester my husband.
I love that. I look forward to being retired and pestering my husband.
Best.
Well, it's such a joy. And like we said, you have really just shaped us in our ability to think in a gospel-centered mm-hmm. way. And I think that's something you have a real gift for and have just really benefited the church at large with your ability to just keep us focused on the cross as the most essential piece, and that, kind of our behavior and our living flows out of that as we honor God. And so as we were thinking about someone to talk about motherhood, we were like, oh, you would be, our show is all about the gospel and motherhood. So of course we want to hear about what you've learned related to that. So Elise, can you tell us a little bit about your early years of motherhood? Like, where you were living? Were you involved in any kind of work or ministry commitments during the little years of raising children? Just give us a little picture of what that season of life looked like for you.
Yeah, I'm glad to do that. Let me back it up a tiny bit, though, and just let you know that I was not raised in what we would call a Christian home. Mm-hmm. And my mom worked outside the home. My mom and dad were divorced. And so when I became a Christian, which really wasn't until right before my 21st birthday, I had made some sort of decisions about how I was going, the kind of mother I was going to be. And basically what that meant to me at that time was that I was going to be right up in my kids' business all the time.
Sounds like a lot of us.
I know. That sounds familiar.
You know, I had, because my mom was, and it really wasn't her fault, but it was just the way things worked out. My mom was really pretty much absentee. And so, you know, starting in my early teenage years, again, Southern California, I fell into just a life of debauchery and unbelief. And so then right before my 21st birthday, the Lord saved me, really at the time of the Jesus movement in California. And then I made the decision that I wasn't going to be like my mom. I was going to be really, really involved. And I was going to make sure that my kids were Christians. I came into my marriage to Phil. Phil and I have been married about 44 years.
Woo-hoo.
Yeah, well, proves that there's a God. So I came into the marriage. I had already had a little boy, James. And so Phil and I got married, and we didn't have a lot of money at that point. And we both wanted our kids to get a Christian education. And this was really at the beginning, in some ways, of the Christian education movement. So I got a job teaching in Christian school so my kids could go to school. The primary reason was so that I would get free tuition. So I did that, and I did that for a number of years. I want to say maybe 6 total or 7 years. But then when our middle child, Jessica, was, I think she was in sixth or seventh grade, that was right at the beginning of homeschooling. It was the beginning of the homeschool movement, which, you know, makes me like sound so old. But anyway, it was the beginning of the homeschool movement in Southern California. And so I decided that I was going to, because, and this was honestly the primary reason, it was because I didn't think that I was able to control what they were learning enough, even though they were in Christian school. All right. So, I mean, I want you to hear that there's this sort of overriding motivation that I had, that I was going to make sure that my kids didn't live the kind of life that I lived. So I thought, all right, I can't control what's going on in her in the middle school experience, even in Christian school. So I decided to homeschool. And at that point, there were not a lot of people homeschooling. There were some. So I was able to join a co-op and all of that sort of business. But I was pretty much on my own as far as all my friends and everything were concerned. So homeschooled them for, and every year, and I'm sure that there are women who listen to your podcast and think, oh, homeschool. I'll just be really honest. Every year it was I don't know if I'm going to be able to do this again. Yeah. So that's how I spent my time. Basically, I was focused on trying to make sure that my kids were not going to live the kind of life that I lived.
Yeah, I think that's something so many of us can relate to, whether it's in schooling or just in how we control their diets or what they wear or, you know, what they're involved in. And so can you, Elise, walk us through how you kind of discovered that fear and your eyes were awakened to it, and how God met you there or transformed your mind to have gospel hope in the midst of those challenges and just that desire to control everything in their environment?
Well, you know, let me talk about kind of the bad fruit that came out of that.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. What came out of that was, you know, any time that you try to control any other human being, you're going to end up either feeling sorry for yourself or angry or proud. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's really the only way it's going to go. Jessica and Joel, and, you know, some people probably know Jessica, you know, this is Jessica Thompson. Mm-hmm. She's married and she's a writer and a Christian writer and mom. And Joel is a pastor in the PCA. They've turned out well but they haven't turned out well because of me. Mm-hmm. What mm-hmm. This is my primary message to the women who are listening to this today and hoping that somehow they're going to hear maybe a secret to having kids who grow up and are in ministry. Mm. Okay. Because, I mean, you know, we can all see our kids being the pastor.
Oh, yeah.
and what I want to say is that my controlling of them, it was just the grace of God that it is the grace of God that they will even talk to me at this point. Because, quite frankly, I was very controlling. And when I saw them doing things that I didn't like, I was angry and demanding, or I felt sorry for myself, or I was angry with my husband because I didn't think he was doing everything he ought to do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's easy to blame the other person.
Absolutely, absolutely. But, you know, I want to say that when I think about our kids and the way they are now with their kids, and this would include James as well. My husband Phil came out of a Christian home, but they weren't crazy like I was. Phil was really the normalizing influence in the home. So whereas I would have been the person that would have been really, really controlling about everything, Phil was not that way. We ended up doing a lot of really fun things with our kids. That was not me primarily. That was actually Phil. Phil's desire to make childhood fun for the children, I think, has had a huge benefit in their life. And so I watch them now and how they are with their kids, and they're all about having a good time with their kids. That doesn't mean that they don't discipline or aren't serious. They totally are. But I mean, I've had to ask them to forgive me for the ways in which I tried to make them into being a Christian and really never gave them grace. So, you know, so yes, we wrote that book. We wrote Give Them Grace, but it wasn't because that's what I did with them. It was because I was beginning to see that the gospel was really central to the Christian, which is kind of a funny thing to say, because you would think like, yeah, duh. But no, it really wasn't. When I became a Christian, I was thrilled about the gospel, but then it became all about me and how I was supposed to get the bus down the road. Mm-hmm. And that's what I did with my parenting. So with my kids, I have apologized. I have asked for forgiveness from each one of my kids for the way that I rode them, because it was all coming out of my fear. Mm-hmm. The fear that they would do the kinds of things I did. And it wasn't even that, I'm going to be really honest here. I mean, yes, I really loved them, but what I wanted was my own righteousness. Mm-hmm. I wanted my reputation as a mom to be good. Mm-hmm. So, you know, because I'm trying to make up for the fact that I was such a train wreck. So it was really all about trying to approve of myself and get other people's approval that I was really a good mom, and my kids were going to make that happen.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think one of the reasons why we wanted to do this series just about faithfulness and motherhood from women who are kind of on the other side and have grandchildren now and can look back is so that moms who are listening, who are at our stage with young children, can hear there isn't a formula and it's by God's grace alone. And I think we want to. I feel that in myself. I could describe myself as that a little bit before I was saved at 20, like a train wreck. Mm-hmm. And I look at my kids and think, okay, what can I do to make you not do what I did? And then I'll pursue that versus going, no, God, how are you asking me to parent them with grace and entrusting them to you? Regardless of what decisions they make, I'm not in control of that. I just want to be faithful to what he's asking me to do and not parent in a reactionary way. And I think so many young women can relate to that and just need to hear this word that's so hard. It kind of makes you want to like stomp your foot a little bit of, there isn't just do A, B, and C and your kids will be protected or turn out a certain way.
Right. And every mother listens to this or who's listening to this knows that when you're called on to perform in a certain way, it's not a wonderful thing. You know, I used to take my kids and like parade them in front of the pastor. I swear to you, and make them tell the pastor the verse I taught them. Quite honestly, I know now that, well, yes, did I have a desire for my children to serve Christ? Well, of course I did. And that was the way that I baptized my idolatry.
Elise, can you walk us through then what you would have done differently? Like if you could go back and have a do-over, like how would you train your children now? And how would you direct them in the ways of the Lord? And how do you separate like your own messy motivations with desiring, you know, like from a pure place for your children to know and love the Lord for their own sake and their own relationship with him?
Mm-hmm. Okay, so let's take your last question first. They're not going to have pure motives. So let's settle that. There's not a person on the planet, aside from the Lord Jesus, who ever had completely pure motivation. So you may look at your children and say, I really love them, and I think that my motive in loving them is good. Well, it is good. That's a good. But it's never going to be pure. And so we don't want to spend a ton of time trying to figure out, is this pure? Is this not pure? You know, I just assume that part of what you're going to do is have a selfish motivation. Now, you're going to know that you have that by the way you respond when they fail. You'll know what your motivation is, not by spending a lot of time sort of trying to figure out your motive, but actually by looking at the way that you respond when they fail. And so if you get angry or, you know, overly angry,
right,
if you feel sorry for yourself, if you feel like you just want to give up, you know, and everybody feels like they want to give up sometimes, but I'm talking about that. Okay, you guys just do whatever you want. I'm tired. You know, that kind of response, then that's going to tell you or here's another way you can know. When you like walk into church and here's, you know, the Von Trapp family. And I used to say the Duggars, but I don't say that anymore. So here's the Von Trapp family, right? And all of the little kids are dressed perfectly and they're all perfectly obedient. And, you know, there's the husband and, you know, he's just perfect and you're supposed to be the perfect mom. And they sit so sweetly during church and actually take notes on the sermon and all that sort of business. When you look at that family and you're jealous, then you know. Or here's another way. When you look at a family that's a train wreck and, you know, the kids are like leaping off the pews and all of that sort of business. And or you hear about, you know, their older kids going off the rails and you say to yourself, I'm so glad I'm not like that. Okay. Then you'll know. All right, Lord, help me to have the right motivation. So, you know, you asked me, what should I have done? Well, what I should have done was realized that salvation belongs to the Lord.
Mm-hmm. Amen.
Right? Mm-hmm. So salvation, the salvation of my children and their children is not something I can control. Are we called as moms to be people who faithfully seek to teach, nurture, discipline our children? Yes, we are. We're called to do that, but only because God might use us. And you understand, I said that word might. God might use us as means, as the way that he'll draw our children. But that's not guaranteed. I'm not going to look at how my child responds then from day to day. I mean, I can remember we would sit there and, like, let's say we were going to have a time of prayer as a family. And if they were messing around, which they were always messing around.
Yeah, right?
Always. Right? I would look at that and I would think, oh, they're lost. And then the next thing I would think is, that means I'm a terrible mother. Mm. Or Phil's a terrible dad. Or we're both terrible. And then I would double down on what I wanted them to do, which, of course, see, we always respond to the law in the same way. So if the law says to you, don't wiggle when mom is reading Proverbs, you in your heart are going to automatically want to wiggle, right? That's our heart's response, particularly to some sort of a person who wants to control you all the time. So what would I do? I mean, what would I have done differently? Honestly, I watch my kids raise their kids, and I'll give you an example. And just to say, my kids are not perfect at all. And their kids are not perfect at all. I mean, they're not close. But but I watch how they interact with them. And they are not, my kids' reputation as parents are not the primary motivation for the way they interact with their kids. They're seeking to be fellow sinners with their children who run to Jesus together. Mm. So I'll give you an example. You know, Jessica's eldest son, Wesley, is 19 now. So this happened a number of years ago. And Hayden, his younger brother, who's now a senior in high school, was 3. And Jessica was in the other room, and she heard this blood-curdling scream, which every mom has heard that scream. And you come running out of the bedroom, you find Wesley straddling on top of Hayden, just basically pounding him, mm-hmm. Right? I mean, you know, let's just say that's what little kids do. Mm-hmm. She looked at Wesley, and he had this big bite mark on his back.
Ooh. Yeah.
You know, what had happened was Hayden had messed with Wesley's Thomas trains. Now, as a first child, Wesley was all into making sure that his Thomas trains were lined up perfectly.
Oh, yes. Uh-huh. Oh, yes.
Definitely.
Sounds right. Familiar.
Mm-hmm. Right? Okay. So, but, and then Hayden, of course, is a second child, really probably relished messing up his train, you know, just to make him mad. So he did. So Jessica picks up Wesley, picks him up off of Hayden, and says, Wesley, you must love your brother. Now, when she does that, what is she doing? She's telling Wesley the law. This is the law. You have to love God with your whole heart, soul, mind, and strength, and your neighbor as yourself. So she's giving Wesley the law, and that's the appropriate thing to do. We give our kids rules. We give them laws because they need to know what is expected of them, but that's not the only reason. So she picks up Wesley off of Hayden, and she says, you must love your brother. And through tears and anger, Wesley looks at her and just basically screams, I can't. Mm-hmm. How do we respond to that? Now, I'll tell you how I would have responded to it. I would have said, oh, yes, you can. And I'm going to make sure you do. And if you don't, I'm going to know the reason why. Okay. Mm-hmm. But the way she responded to him was, he says, I can't. And she says, you're right. Flee to Jesus. Now, do you hear that? That's the difference. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And I never would have said that.
It is just a phrase difference, but the heart of the response is so different. And I know I'm so tempted to threaten my kids into good behavior. Yeah. Like, you know, sometimes my response in that situation would be, yes, you can. And if you don't, here's right. the consequences. So behave so that you avoid consequences.
Right.
And while it's helpful to present consequences,
yes,
that acknowledgement piece of, you're right, you cannot love, you cannot obey, you cannot follow all these rules. Now what are we going to do? There's only one good answer to this, and right. it's Jesus. I think takes some real mind shift. But once we see it for ourselves, it is like, man, I'm desperate for this too. And so I want to give this same desperate Christ, you know, hungry response to my children. Yeah, really good example.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing. So instead of Jessica being self-righteous, like I was, and saying, oh, yeah, you better, and I can't even believe you're acting that way, you know, as if I don't myself have trouble loving my neighbor, i.e. the children right now. Instead of that, she's encouraging them to run to Christ and ask for grace and mercy. And see, that's what makes our message different. What makes our message different from what any kind of moral, fine, upstanding parent would do is we're saying there is a law and the law can't make you good. But what it can do is tell you that there was one who was good in your place and you can flee to him. Mm-hmm. Now, that doesn't mean that you don't discipline your children. Mm-hmm. Of course you do. Of course you discipline them in whatever way, you know, in your family you do. But you don't depend on the rules to make the children good, because rules don't make kids good. Only Jesus Christ can change their heart and make them want to love their brother. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And for any young mom who is listening, you know, let me be the first to say, and I know Emily will join me in this, this takes practice and it takes a mind shift. And this is something that I feel like, as you were saying, Elise, like our natural inclination is self-righteous parenting. It is to immediately go to like, let's go to consequences. Let's, you know, mold a child's behavior to exactly what we want immediately. Instead of, I think sometimes it takes just stepping back, reminding yourself of the gospel in the moment, because at least I know for me, my natural inclination isn't to love that child in the middle of something where they're misbehaving and I feel embarrassed or I feel frustrated or inconvenienced. So just an encouragement. I think that this is such good truth that you're sharing, Elise. And I know we have a lot of new believers that listen and we have a lot of first generation Christians. So I just love that you've also mm-hmm. shared your story in that, because I know we've been asked a lot for shows or discussion points on that. But if you are new to this, like this is really, I want to plug Elise's book here, yeah. Give Them Grace. You're getting a taste of what's in that book. And she walks through a lot of scenarios in that. It's just very, very helpful to get a little deeper dive into what she's discussing today. And then don't be afraid to practice, because it's only going to come by digging in and doing the hard work of applying these types of skills. So Elise, as we close here, can you just give some steps a mom might be able to take today to behold God and to enjoy him more fully?
I think that the thing that I want to encourage moms in today is that they would see Jesus, that they would remember Jesus. And what that means is that just as they're going through their day, that they would remember that Jesus, who was the second person of the Trinity, became a human being. Jesus was a little boy. Jesus had to learn language. He had to learn table manners. He had to learn all of this stuff because he was completely human. And so he understands. First of all, this is great news for the children. Mm-hmm. Jesus understands what it's like to be a child. Mm-hmm. He understands what it's like to have brothers and sisters because he did. Jesus understands, and this is for moms who maybe are single parents or they feel like they're all on their own. Jesus understands what it's like to be the single head of a household. Because at some point after age 12, his father died. Mm-hmm. And so Jesus became the person in the male person in the home who had to care for his mom and his siblings. And you see him doing that all through the Gospels, interacting with his mom. And then at the very end of his life, there he is hanging on the cross. And what is he doing? He's caring for his mother. So Jesus was a single head of a household. And for all of the women who are listening today, who feel like there's, you know, God couldn't possibly help them or understand, Jesus knows exactly what you're going through. Mm. And he can help you. And he lived a perfect life. See, he was in a sense, he had to parent his siblings. He understands what it's like to parent little sinners. and he had disciples who really never listened to what he was talking about, completely clueless until the resurrection. I mean, really, these guys. And so he understands the frustration that we feel when we feel like we've been saying the same thing over and over and over again, and it just never penetrates their little hearts or minds. Mm-hmm. Jesus understands that because at least five times in the Gospels, we know that he said, I'm on my way up to Jerusalem to die, and I will be raised again. It went right over their heads. Mm-hmm. They just, you know, they didn't get it. And what they were doing, you know, right before the betrayal, when he's going to be hung on the cross, what they were doing was fighting about who was going to be greatest. Doesn't that sound like our family? Who's the best? Who's the best at this sport? Who's the best at this game? Who has the most stuff? Who's the strongest? Who's the prettiest? Who has the most friends? Who's the best? We need to see him. We need to see him. So he understands all of that, and he did his parenting perfectly. And my primary message to moms today is this. You may struggle, and you do, as a mom, but the really great news, if you've put your trust in Jesus Christ, you have his perfect record of being a perfect parent. So when God looks at you, he doesn't see the ways you've blown it. He doesn't see your sin. You are completely forgiven and you are completely righteous. And so you don't have to try to work out your guilt about, you know, being a bad parent. You don't have to try to work that out somehow. You are forgiven and you are completely righteous. And then the really great news is, Jesus, who understands everything you're going through, not just because he's God, but also by experience. Jesus, who understands everything you're going through, is praying for you right now. So, you know, what do I say to parents? What do I say to moms? Remember the gospel. And you know what? Listen to me. I've written X number of books about the gospel and how to remember it in your daily life, and I forget it. Okay? I forget it. I mean, seriously, we're in the middle of moving, and I'm all freaked out about where we're going to move. And, you know, I mean, here's Jesus who said, I have no place to lay my head. He understands, and he will care for me and get us to where we need to be when we need to be there. Relax a little bit, Mom. Enjoy your children. Be free to enjoy them. And when they fail, which they will, when they sin, which they will, take their hand as a fellow sinner and run to Jesus together, because he loves to pour out mercy on sinners.
Mm-hmm. I think this needs a slow clap right there. A little slow clap.
Mic drop.
Thank you, Elise.
Yeah.
And you know, one other thing, just to say to your kids, don't think that you're going to be good enough or bad enough. Your mama, and I'm not good enough, and I'm, you know, I've certainly have sinned enough. The reality is Jesus has it all. Just flee to him and I'll go with you.
Well, thank you so much, Elise, for coming on the show today. We really appreciate you sharing our wisdom. We really appreciate you sharing your wisdom. I am sure there are many moms who have just been touched by your words today and hopefully feeling more relief as they know they don't have to, you know, work through all the guilt, but they can just walk in freedom because Christ has already banished that and already given them that hope, that eternal hope that we can trust in today. So thank you so much for your time. We really appreciate it.
Thank you.